My brothers, a number of years ago, I was giving a retreat to the priests of Cleveland, and that would be 2008. And I developed for the talks, because they were going through a really hard time, I developed a talk on what would be considered like the charism of a diocesan priest. That's not the right language, but it would be the gift and dignity of the divine of the priest. First of all, it has always irritated me that the Jesuits are so clear on what their spirituality is. The Franciscans are, at least in some muddled form, we also have a sense of our charism, as the Benedictines have lived for thousands of years and are marvelously alive with us and their charism. Dominicans are immensely proud of their charism to carry on the wisdom of St. Thomas. So it irritated me that no one said something like that about diocesan priests. How do you guys fit into that? And in the course of my talk, you'll find out why I have such a profound love and reverence for diocesan priests. So at the Passionate Retreat House in Pittsburgh, there was a priest of the diocese sitting in the kitchen talking to a passionate guy, talking to a diocesan guy, And the lady that does cooking came in the kitchen, and she said, "Oh, hello, Father. You a passionist?" And he said, no, I'm diocesan." She said, "Oh, you're just an ordinary priest, just an ordinary priest." That's the first sign of your charism. You're ordinary priest. That is, you are taken from and returned to a vast community of ordinary people. You're one of them. The rich, the poor, the black, the white, Hispanic and Oriental, the sick and the well, the young and the old, the newly married, the newly unmarried, the soldier, the candlestick maker, the beautiful young woman, and the beautiful elderly man in a nursing home, they're all your people. You're all your people. George Ashenbrenner, who's a marvelous Jesuit, was my spiritual director for a while, and he really developed some of his own thoughts on this, and he says the priest is inserted in the midst of common people. He has a divine presence. You're there to tell people about God. You're a doctor of souls. You're a brother, a leader, a prophet of the Lord's abiding and ever-present love. You're just an ordinary guy. And I'd say this is true of my two relatives who are diocesan priests, my nephew Matt McLean in the Pittsburgh Diocese, and my uncle Anthony Worley, who was a pastor in Newcastle before he died. My uncle died with $700 left because he gave his money to other people. The second attribute that George Ashenbrenner develops is you're on the front line. You're right there. I don't mean to say religious aren't. They are in a particularly beautiful place for the church. But as far as the ordinary, everyday stuff of a diocese goes, the bishop is really happy to have you be his representative, extension of his priesthood, on the front line. He said, "The pastoral love and availability and wisdom of the parish priest is something that is marvelous. At the present time, my family is in Beaver, Pennsylvania, and the pastor's Bob Miller. And he's so down to earth. He's absolutely the most simple guy. And I had a series of funerals in the parish, and I could just see how beautiful he just stepped back. Even though he's a pastor, he stepped back. Let me step forward. Even coming to the funeral home, he was there, but he wasn't making a big blush, a splash for himself. He was definitely where he needed to be at that time. So that second attribute, the first, ordinary man, the front line, and the third I've seen is the ground of the church, ground of the church. We are in Papua New Guinea, the Capuchins. We go to an extremely difficult mission where there's a lot of tribal fighting, a lot of pretty violent life there, and our men have lived there, and so we are. That's our task, to try to establish the church there. We've been there 90 years now in a very difficult mission. And one of the things that happened to us is that we had young men come to us, because we were the only priests there at first, who wanted to be diocesan priests. And actually, the church isn't established until the diocesan priests are at the center of the church. You can have Carmelites come in. You can have Trappists come in. You can have Jesuits come in. But the diocesan priest is the man who is closest to keeping stability in the church, because the religious can be moved from place to place. The stability of the Benedictines is an exception to that, which is their part of their charism. But this is really one of the wonderful things that you do. We know in New Guinea, and the people know, that a missionary, like a Capuchin missionary, can go home after being there 20 years or 40 years. Their home is there, and the bishop knows they're his. So that's a tremendously wonderful gift that they have. So you are on the front line, and you are susceptible in your ministry of being called upon in the strangest ways. So one of the diocesan priests in Pittsburgh actually was present for a shooting in East Liberty a couple years ago of a man who shot into the women's gym. And my nephew was vocation director at that time in Pittsburgh, and the priest who saw it called Matt, and Matt got David Zubik, and they went there. That's typical. David Zubik is a wonderful, good friend of mine, but David Zubik knows that wherever there's trouble, he goes. He goes there. And he's very good at that. I talked to him just last week about his going into some trouble moment because people had called, and he goes, and he wants to be there. I was with David Zubik one night when he was at Catholic Charities, and he said he wanted to see me, but some little old lady took hold of him, and he did something that had a big impact on my life. And that was, he was a very tall guy, this old lady, she never ran out of words to talk about. Now, Bishop Zubik wanted to talk to me, so I was standing on the side, getting more like, you know, but he was like this. He didn't lift his eyes up, he just stayed with her. That is magnificent. And then he said, "Hey Bob, come on, I'll walk you to your car." He had an umbrella, and we had plenty of time. But that ordinariness, that makes you guys very beautiful. Very beautiful. When my sister died, the mother of 9 children and Father Matt's mother, David came over to the house the evening that she died. And then she died actually while Mass was saying Mass for her. That was a beautiful moment. And 8 of her 9 children were touching her body. And then after that, we were waiting for the undertaker to come, and David Zubik came. And when he came, he blessed my sister and kissed her body. And then he sat down and said, "Let's each talk about your mother." Really beautiful moment for a priest like David, who is very attentive to people. So you're the ground of the church, you're on the front line, but you're just an ordinary guy. However, in every diocese that I have served, and I serve right now in a very beautiful diocese of Washington, Archdiocese of Washington, D.C., where the priests are, they're marvelous priests, bunches of them, that one of the things that is really, really wonderful, give me one second here, I've lost what I wanted to do. I want to show you something of my mom and dad's love for our pastor in Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania, where the pastor had cancer in the face and he had to be operated on, and the cancer got worse, so they had to make all kinds of twists into his face so he looked really bad, and that didn't work. So took flesh from his chest to reconstruct the face, and he looked monstrous. And he would slobber when he ate because he couldn't hold his tongue. And my mom and dad would go down and eat dinner with him so he could have beer and crackers. And my mom and dad just loved this man because he was this incredibly wonderful priest who gave everything he could possibly do, the founder of Sarah Club in Beaver Valley and close to my dad. And he was just this beautiful guy. And then when I used to go to my uncle's parish on a weekend from St. Fidelis in Butler, I used to go there sometimes. And usually when there's a visiting priest, he gets people for confession. He can get a pretty good line. But I could have sat out smoking cigarettes. I don't smoke, but could have sat out on the curb because his line for confession reached all the way to the back of the church because he was just an ordinary guy. Even when Charlie Rice, a great charitable justice priest at my uncle's jubilee, he said a lot of nice things about my uncle. One priest celebrated another, but he said a lot of nice things that my uncle said after that in the sacristy. I want you to know some of the things he said were true. And my uncle always had this great, great sense of humor. My uncle used to get a bunch of priests in a car with a bottle of scotch and go visit some priest that no one ever pays attention to. And the other guys would say, "Oh, Tinny, you're crazy." He said, "No, he's a good guy, come on, bitch." So he'd take a carload of guys to go see another ordinary guy. But what I started to say was, in every diocese I have ever been, there have been diocesan men smarter than Jesuits, more faithful to Thomas and Dominicans, more loving of the liturgy than the Benedictines, better care for the poor than the Franciscans. In every diocese, I've run into guys who could have been big stars, but instead let their star shine for ordinary people in ordinary ways. That is such a beautiful task to do. Cardinal O'Malley, who's a Capuchin I think you know from Boston, my pride is that I taught O'Malley for 5 years and Chaput for 5 years, the Archbishop of Philadelphia, when they went through theology. They belonged to classes that were smarter than me, so it was rather difficult to be a good teacher. But they always boast about me, though it's not true. O'Malley said to his own priests, "I always try to encourage the men in their interior life to discover God's love for us. That love is what gives us courage to do difficult things, our weaknesses and our human frailty, knowing that despite our weaknesses and our frailty, God is there for us. I tell them that this should be a source of strength and motivation in making a vocational decision." So he's encouraging the priests to develop their own depth of a spirituality that includes this incredible love for your brothers who are also ordinary priests. St. Augustine talked about what a priest does, and you want to know what an ordinary priest does, he described it. And why diocesan priests get pretty tired sometime. One of my favorite stories, which I'll tell first, Joe Bernardine of Chicago was an absolutely beautiful guy. And he had two stories about priests that he loved. And the one story was, Sunday night, the pastor had been very busy in the parish. He was very tired. He came home, took off his rabbi, hung it up, got a little ice and scotch, and rattled the joyfully as he went over to sit down, and the telephone rang. And he said, oh. So he puts the scotch down, puts his rabbit back on, goes to the hospital. There's a man sitting on the edge of his bed. And he said, Father, I've been waiting for you. He put his arms, he was sitting in the bed, and a priest came in. He put his arms around the priest. The priest started the prayers, and he died in his arms. And so that's an image. But that goes on in hundreds of ways through your ministry, because you're in touch with the people. I don't mean to say that religious who are in parishes aren't part of that ordinary life too. I think it belongs to diocesan priests and to order priests where they're pastors. But there's another difference. And the difference is you're immediately associated with your bishop. And we are associated with only under the bishop as our ministry, but we are associated with our provincial or abbot, who stands between us, not in a bad way, but you are his in a way that we are not, even though we are his also in a way that is psychologically and really unique and blessed for you. So, okay, Augustine, what does Augustine say? This is a description of a priest. They have to, this is a description of the priest's task for the laity. You're ordinary guys, so this is St. Augustine talking about you. The wayward have to be corrected. The faint-hearted cheered up. The weak supported. The gospel opponents need to be refuted, its enemies guarded against. The unlearned need to be taught, the indolent stirred up, the argumentative checked. The proud must be put in their place, the desperate set on their feet, those engaged in quarrels reconciled, the needy have to be helped, the oppressed have to be liberated, the good to be encouraged, and the bad to be tolerated, and all must be loved. That is a gorgeous letter. That's in the encyclical of Benedict Spes Salvi, paragraph 29. But it's really lovely. The priesthood must be good for people, if you're thinking of being a priest. Seriously, it can be very good for you, because according to the rather exhaustive study of Stephen Rossetti, priests are probably the happiest men in the United States, ordinarily. That the studies have shown that because of the spiritual life of the priest, because of his dedication to people, giving himself away, that is what makes you happy. Not money, not perfect this or perfect that, but serving the people of God. It is really a wonderful thing. Rossetti carefully said, you will notice a priest is happy mainly because he has an attitude based on faith. When he beholds the faces of his people, when he serves them, when he finds fellow brothers who share their faith and their human life, divine and human. I visited this priest in Cleveland one time. He's a lovely, lovely man. And he was talking about the people. The people are a pain in the butt, he said. Often priests say that. But it's a friendly pain, actually. And when I saw him say Mass later that night, his face was radiant. The people obviously loved him. He was from an Italian parish. He's an Italian from an Italian parish. And so, our happiness means we're willing to take on trials, but we're happy because God loves us and we love them too. So I try to find ways to encourage priests. And especially if I have the opportunity to be a confessor or a spiritual director, I give first choice to that. And I direct a number of priests and am so pleased that I can do that. Boy, and they've been in really important battles. Now, I want to talk about the priesthood, diocesan priesthood, and asceticism. Because that's an important issue, especially for religious orders. you have a different kind of asceticism. I mean, you can't do away with physical asceticism. You need to restrain your body in temperance, whether it's sexuality or food. You need to have the prudent example of all those things. But there's an asceticism of yours that is very unique, and it is the asceticism of time. Your time will not be your own. Just as you think you're finished, another phone call comes, another funeral comes up, another call to do this and to do that. It'll always be that way. That's why you are a servant of the ministry of the priest. So your availability in spirit and life, giving hope, is that you are a man who lives for other people. You have to go to meetings, and even more meetings in the years to come. You have to make painful decisions on leadership for the good of all. You might have to fire somebody, hire somebody else, and no one would understand. You can't explain why you do some things, because it would mean compromising somebody else's confidentiality. You will be misunderstood, just as Jesus was, and you'll be lovingly understood by many. You care for the people of the diocese, but you also know that part of your task as a diocesan priest is to take care of the diocese. That, I don't know whether you realize or not, but when you join the diocese, you belong to the presbyterate. And that presbyterate is really an important world. It's complicated, all kind of characters, people very different than yourself, doing things that you wouldn't do, never do that way, but that's still, that presbyterate is really important. And there's a lot of talk today on how to make that stronger. But at the same time, you are not simply ordained to serve a parish and that's your world. You need to care for the presbyterate and you need to care for the diocese. So if you are a natural, there's boards of directors and boards of counselors, but every priest in the diocese has a right to tell the bishop something that needs to be done for the good of the diocese. You have a gift of care for the whole diocese. And you also have some gift of care for the mission task of the diocese. So many, many diocesan priests are in the missions, and so your care is also for that. But the diocese is your spiritual territory. Your sense of obedience to the bishop is very, very unique and strong and yet dignified. The canon law, the church asks you to speak to the bishop about what you can do best and what assignment you might have. And actually, that's very Franciscan, because we don't have a rigid obedience like the Jesuits would have. We have, St. Francis wrote into the rule that if a guy's not doing very well, he goes and talks to the superior. And the superior sits in the place of the servant, and the guy who's complaining about it's difficult becomes the master, according to St. Francis. He's very, very beautiful in that. If you love the priesthood of Jesus Christ, you will love the presbyterate, and you'll love the church. Priests who embarrass the church, cause trouble for the bishop, are a heartache that's incredible. On the other hand, the bishop tries to be kind for our foibles that you have and you will have. John the 23rd was my big hero. I was in Rome for the beginning of Vatican Council, and I used to run down to hear him talk every Wednesday. But when he went to Venice, there was a priest, a notorious priest, who was doing bad things. And so John the 23rd went to see him, and when the priest was trembling because people told him that the patriarch's coming to see you. And John went to the priest and he said, "Father, can I go to confession?" he honored the priest's priesthood while the priest was not honoring his priesthood. But that, and there are beautiful bishops that way, kind and dear. If there is a brother priest in trouble, he belongs to you. If you saw somebody doing something very, very bad in the priesthood, you should talk to him. If he doesn't listen to you, you should talk to whoever is responsible in the diocese. You have responsibility. If you know that somebody's not living a life affecting, say, children, or even affecting marriages, you need to be willing to correct at the right time. So, if I would say that there is something beautiful in the life of a priest, that beauty is always in my heart. And I hope that you have no desire to be greater than some religious order, because you are already your own genius. You are already your own grace. I was at a cocktail hour in Cleveland one time, and this man, diocesan priest, said to me, "I heard that you Capuchins think you're the best Franciscans." And I said, "No, we don't, because whenever you think you're the best Franciscans, you're not. That proves you're not, because that's not the way St. Francis thought." So I said to him, "No, that's not true." "You know, it doesn't make any difference. We're the only real guys here anyhow." That's not fair to us. And we need to be fair to each other. And when a vocation comes to a religious order, that's not a wound against you in the diocese. When I was young, I left high school, St. Vincent Prep, and I went to a seminary, and Pittsburgh Diocese had a rule. If you ever put a toe inside a religious order, that you will be forever excluded from the Pittsburgh Diocese. So I had to have a special meeting with the vocation director. But having said that, it only made my desire to be a Capuchin stronger. I didn't want to belong to a group that thought that way. And I was all 17. And I thought that treatment needs to be changed. And it was changed after a while. Your spirituality is a spirituality that's highly apostolic. You're called to be the servant of Christ. Your life is to be like Christ among the people. But if you're going to be like Christ and be really apostolic, ready to go, ready to preach, say another Mass, go to the people, you really have to take care of your prayer life. And so I beg of you to use the hermitage that's at hand. And if you don't know what the hermitage is at hand, it's your car. Learn to pray in the car, brothers. So I think I have 3 rosaries that are lost in my car somewhere. If anybody wants to help me look for it before I go home, I'll be happy. But I just find, like, if I go 10 minutes to drive to the Missionaries of Charity, long enough for me to get a rosary in so that I would help these women in the right way. And I just, if I take a long trip, I have CDs I listen to and all that kind of stuff. But all in all, I just am delighted that I was asked. This might be my last conference for any kind of group of people. My mind's kind of slipping on me. But I'm very happy to be invited and to speak to diocesan priests, whom I love with such a great love. When Cleveland was in trouble, I gave a retreat to the priests there, and it was at a Jesuit retreat house, and I hope I don't scandalize you guys, but the guys really had a hard time. And so the Jesuit retreat master said, "Well, we're going to have silence this time." I said, "No, we're not going to have any silence. I'm going to have a gathering of all the priests together every night, and we're going to talk about how our priesthood is in the church today. And after that, I'd like to have wine and beer for the guys so we can have a chat every evening." And it was, boy, we had a discussion. It was marvelous. And some of the greatest priests of the diocese were there, and they spoke up, and some of the young guys were there. It was a wonderful time. And when I give retreats for diocesan men, I really always gather in the evening, and the topic that we have, my priesthood today, how is my priest working for me? And boy, it was wonderful. I just gave one in Washington. A wonderful discussion. Oh, what characters we had. Like, you're not allowed, one of the guys who's very creative, he said, you're not allowed to marry people in some kind of gym or beach or something like that. So somebody comes to him and says, we'd like to get married in the beach. He said, oh, that'd be good. Okay, now what we're going to do is you tell the wedding party to show up, and you'll be just a few minutes late, and you come with your mother and father and the bridegroom and the best man. But come to the church, and we'll get married in the church, and then we'll go to the beach. So I thought it was pretty creative for a guy who's from Arabia. So anyhow, guys, I'm a little bit fuzzy, but I love the diocesan priesthood, and I'm happy to say that's true of Francis of Assisi. What happened to Francis of Assisi is that he was immensely influenced by the Eucharist. And he said one time when he was getting old, and one of the Franciscans preached against the diocesan priest. That was totally contrary to Francis. He never criticized. That was not his way of renewing the church. And so St. Francis was quite upset, and he had a last testament that he wrote when he died. It took him over a period of 2 years. He wrote the last minute notes for you birds, my brothers. And so he wrote the testament. And this is what he wrote in the testament about diocesan priests. In this world, I see nothing corporally of our Lord Jesus Christ, but the bread consecrated by them who alone can do this. And so I will always honor priests above all other persons in the church. And even if they persecuted me, I would not reject them. For they give me the Lord. And it's a very beautiful statement. And part of our spirituality as Franciscans is to have this very great reverence for parish priests. And for many years, our province has educated our seminarians when they come to us in a seminary where diocesan men are. We still do that in Cleveland after. So these are, I guess, my rambling thoughts, but I hope you get the message. I'm very delighted that I could serve you. And may you guys be good diocesan priests. Make sure you're prayerful, cheerful. Get a bottle of scotch. Go see a buddy. Love your brothers. Correct the bishop. Do all those things that belong to you. Amen. God bless.